I may have played that last year.
My
memory, if memory serves, I may have played that before as introductory music during the merriest month of the year, the most wonderful time of the year.
Yeah, you gave me crap about playing an instrumental Carpenter song. What the heck was that?
Suicide. That's the name of the band.
The last show before Christmas, and that's what you came up with.
Suicide. It was a great band of the 70s.
Uh-huh.
In the, well, I mean, I guess they went into the 80s too.
That song notwithstanding.
That song is called Hey Lord.
Uh-huh.
It's a Christmas song by Suicide.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the Christmas, A Christmas Record record. The one with the waitress's Christmas wrapping on it.
Really?
Yes, it is.
Hmm.
It's one of the better songs on that album.
Mm-hmm.
It is a great song about Christmas time.
Okay.
I super love it. You're welcome.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
Thank God for me.
Oh, God. Do not make that your catchphrase. I beg you. I beg you.
Yeah, I won't do it on the show. I won't make it. I won't say it so much on the show.
I'm going to have to start
in real life
carrying around a squirt gun like you do with unruly pets in the face life. Every time you say it.
I think you need to be reminded saying it. To thank God for me. I can't help myself. It is the best thing anyone has said in a movie all year long.
Yes, but you're not allowed to own it.
In the confines of this apartment,
no.
I think I'm completely allowed.
No.
Especially when it needs to be said.
No. Kiboshing that right
does
now.
Does need to be said.
Nipping it in the bud.
By you.
No.
A lot.
No. Yes, I should say thank God for me all the time, but I won't because I'm modest that way.
I am the host of Linoleum Knife, which is what you are listening to.
Which is a podcast about the cinema.
About the cinema. This is my sidekick, my assistant.
I'm...
My intern, Alonzo Duralde.
I'm the boss of you.
He's the film critic of TheWrap.com. I'm the...
Writing my coattails...
I'm the film critic of the...
Is Dave White.
Of Movies.com.
Of Movies.com.
Yeah.
Who could not plug in a single wire involved for this show if his life depended on it.
I do. Actually, that's not correct.
And so...
I plug in my headphones. Not only do I plug in my headphones, I even screw the adapter onto the headphone thing to put it into our... LiveWire Solutions 4-channel stereo headphone amplifier.
Great. Well, you do that next week if you can even find where the 4-channel amplifier lives.
It lives in the bag.
And see how much show you get
it
out of that.
It lives in the bag.
See how much show you get out of that thing.
It lives in the podcast bag.
Yeah.
There's a black podcast bag, a tote. All the equipment lives in the bag.
I'm the one who makes all this happen. So thank God for me.
I could maybe figure this out on my own if I
It might take me. I wish.
It might take me, I don't know, a day or two. Trial and error. I can figure out things trial and error.
I have begged you, please learn this so that when I'm out of town, we don't have to just have Bibbs or Gray come over and walk you through all this
tape
it for you. And no. I can't do it.
I know you're going to Sundance.
The technical blah, 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 blah.
I know you're going to Sundance in August. I mean, August.
Yes.
In January.
In August.
I know you're going to Sundance in January, and I'm going to have to figure it out. You're going to have to.
No.
Here's how it's going to happen.
Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to
write
that up,
down.
And you're going to be like, oh, good, yeah. And then Bibbs or Gray is going to come over and tape a show with you.
They might come over and tape
and
a show with me.
And wipe your
anyway.
Nose.
They don't know it yet. I don't know if I. They don't know that I'm going to ask either one of them.
You know what? Bibbs is going to be at Sundance too.
Teach
so
me.
Cannot.
Write it all down on a piece of paper with a pencil, and I will learn it, and then I'll have a special guest that it maybe isn't Bibbs or Gray. Yeah. You don't know who I'm going to have on this show.
I will happily draw you a roadshow.
I might ask one of my super famous celebrity friends to to be on the show.
Anna Maria Alberghetti?
I don't know who anybody. I don't know anyone super famous.
Rula Linska? I can't wait for that.
Who do we know that's famous that I could have on the show? Who's kind of famous?
Rose Abdu.
Rose could be on the show. Rose was a regular on Gilmore Girls.
That's right. The best show ever.
It was and the best
on,
TV show ever.
And on Bunheads.
She was also on Bunheads.
And she is in The Guilt Trip.
Yeah. I could have her. I could have Kevin. He's a series regular on a sitcom.
Here's the thing. Actors don't want to come on a podcast and talk.
TV actors talking about a movie podcast.
Well, they don't want to talk crap about movies because, you know,
they might have to work with someone.
These are all potential employees.
We know three actors who have a degree of fame.
Yes.
Among certain people.
Right.
Like famous. What's the expression your dad used to say?
Muy conocido en su casa a la hora de cenar.
This makes me laugh every time. It means famous at your own dinner table in your house.
Famous at your own house at dinner time.
Yeah. I would say they're famous with specific demographics.
Yes.
Gilmore Girls fans.
Yeah.
Children.
Mm-hmm. Broadway people.
Broadway people. And indie lesbians.
Oh, right.
I'm thinking about Gwen.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
I'm thinking about her this week because I took a picture of the snowflake that she knit for us for our Christmas tree.
Yes.
And I'm
looking at it now.
I look at it every day and I think about her, which is great. That's why we have it on the tree.
Right.
Those are only three famous-ish
friends.
We
have a few other ishes flying around.
I guess, but those are people we never see.
Yeah, well, yeah. Because they're off doing famous-y things.
They're off actually being genuinely famous.
Right.
Instead of somewhat well-known, like by our other friends.
Who live in the neighborhood and have have steadier gigs that keep them at home.
Right. The, I don't know, who else would I have on the show? I could have a fellow film critic.
Sure. There's the...
Who would I ask?
An endless array of people.
Who would
I
have?
But first you have to learn how to actually plug all this stuff in.
Maybe I'll have the schmoes on. They might be busy. Maybe. That's three mics, though.
They could share one. I'm sure they've done it before.
They don't want to get that close to each other.
Make him kiss.
Ellis would do it.
If it were a video podcast, they would do it. They're shameless that way.
What are we? Movies. There aren't very many this week.
Yeah, this is a light week because next week is heavy.
This episode will not be very long. Next week's will probably be almost epic. As long as the White Christmas comes.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, this is Sunday before Christmas, and you still have a few moments left to buy our extra podcast that is entirely devoted to White Christmas.
Yes.
It is a 2-hour podcast. It is a podcast that was recorded while the film was being watched by us, so that if you want to listen to the podcast while you watch White Christmas, I mean, obviously your sound of the movie would be down, so
much
you could hear us say great, really smart things.
Insightful, fascinating.
About it. Then that's, you can do that, or you could just listen to it in your car, which is what I think people do. Anyway, and it's $1.99. You PayPal'd me. Ask linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Right. Drop us a line. I'll give you all the
information on how to do it. It's
mere pennies a minute.
Honestly, it's 98.5 cents per person talking to you. 99.5 cents in math. For each of us. That means you're paying each of us half of 99.5 cents per hour to deliver this great, excellent thing.
49.75.
Whatever that is. In math, whatever you
it's
just said.
It's a steal, no matter how you say it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's great. You know what's great about it? We get all the money.
Yes.
And I've been very excited and very happy this month watching my email inbox light up with people buying it and giving us money.
And we
better, super love your money.
We better not hear about like any crazy piracy going on.
What do you mean?
Like people just sharing it around.
A, we'll never know. B, we got their $2. I mean, it's an honor system. You're supposed to not share it with anybody. Don't pirate us.
It's not like we're a label.
Be a pirate with us.
This is literally just us.
Do you think anyone is doing that? I don't think anyone is doing
I can't
that.
Imagine that there's that, that level of demand.
Anybody who is buying this podcast is, if they have this idea, oh, I'm going to just share this with everybody, here's what they're going to do. They're going to share, they're going to put it on their email. They're going to go, they're going to say, hey, friends, want this podcast about White Christmas that's 2 hours long by two guys you've never heard of? And everyone will be like, No. So it's not going
to
happen.
We're marketing directly to the people who actually want to hear
it. If you're listening to this, I mean, if you're buying this thing, you're probably the only one that wants to hear it. Even though it's really...
But we thank all of you, everyone.
We have painstakingly researched everything and even spend our time during the running time correcting our own factual errors. Almost all of them. I think
we caught them all.
We caught almost all of our factual errors during the course of the recording.
I was listening to
We corrected ourselves during the podcast.
I was listening to the new episode of Team Jack, and he at one point mistakenly referred to Reality Bites as a Richard Linklater movie.
Yeah.
And I texted him and told him that was not the case, and I said, relax, we make howling factual errors on the show all the time. And he said, about the howling? So, yeah.
No pro or anti-Jack email came in this week.
Well,
Means interest in him is dying
down.
It's
been months. I think we can all
It's been months, but people were on fire for a very long time.
Mm.
And then he came to the Christmas party.
I got a pro.
Did we talk about this last week?
Yes, we did.
He came to the Christmas party, and I told him all about it.
I got a pro Jack.
He was kind of mortified.
I got a pro Jack text this week.
From
Jack.
The great conversation continues.
It does. Yeah. It does indeed. It's
he'll be back in 2014.
Just you wait.
We're gonna spring you on him. Spring him on you again. Just wait.
All right. Well, we have so few movies. Let's get on.
Anchorman.
With it. Anchorman 2.
Yeah.
The legend continues.
It's real funny.
It is.
Go tell your tell everyone your thing about it. Okay. I'm gonna tell them what happens.
Yes. Do.
Anchorman 2 takes place sometime in the future. Not the
future compared to the first movie.
The future compared to the first movie. Not the future.
They say that it's 1980, but if you're paying attention...
But it's kind of whatever year.
There's references to things like Trivial Pursuit and Ghostbusters that would not come around.
So it's a sloppy 1980
full
of anachronisms. And they are Ron and what's-her-face, Christina Applegate playing...
Veronica
Corningstone. Corningstone. They're in New York. They are a married news team, just like us. And they're on weekend...
Network weekend
news. Veronica gets a promotion to nighttime network anchor. Ron gets fired. Then 24-hour news begins, because it's the early 80s. Everyone thinks it's a joke. And so they hire Ron Burgundy to make sure that it is a joke. And the film posits that everything that is wrong with the news in 2013 was begun by Ron Burgundy in 1980.
Car chase coverage, weathermen standing in the middle of tornadoes.
Celebrity worship kind of stuff.
Knee-jerk patriotism.
Yeah. And that is the bare skeleton of a plot.
Yeah.
Which the film... abandons anytime it feels like abandoning it.
Yeah. There's a very lengthy sequence having to do with Ron being blind and living in a lighthouse.
And befriending a shark. And, all right, now, so go on. Say your thing. Your piece.
Here's my deal with Anchorman 2. I laughed on a regular enough basis. Mm-hmm. And normally it's the kind of movie where I'd say, well, I laughed enough times and fine. But the movie is so sloppy and so slipshod.
Yeah.
They can't bother to create any kind of framework to hang these gags on. I mean, in my review in therap.com, I talk about how, you know, you look at Airplane, which goes off into a million different crazy directions and weird, absurdist gags and spoofy, you know, non sequiturs and you name it. But there's at least a plot. There's a thing that carries the movie from start to finish that they then just bounce off of like crazy. This movie is like this extended sketch. You know, in a 5-minute, 7-minute sketch, you don't have to have any kind of internal logic. You don't have to have any kind of continuity. You don't have to worry about setting up jokes for payoffs later. And so in a 5 or 7 minute sketch, that's fine. And that's how it works. But this is a nearly 2-hour mm-hmm. movie.
Yes, it is.
Thank you, producer Judd Apatow.
Leave it in.
Leave it in. And I just, and while I never stopped laughing, I got exhausted. I just, it was too random.
That's because you don't have comedy stamina.
I guess.
In your buttocks.
And then there's a climactic scene that I won't give away, but it's a repeat of a joke from the first film, but on steroids. Like done.
On steroids is not a.
I know, that's
is a trite
death. You're right.
By the way, I'm calling you out.
Fine, you're right. The moment it came out of my mouth, I thought I've got to not say on steroids.
Yeah.
It's tired.
Never again.
Okay.
Never forget.
You're right. It's banned.
Always remember.
It's right there with Electric Boogaloo. Out.
Yeah.
Anyway, it is a repeat of the first film, but writ large and overdone and overstuffed.
Now, writ. That's a fancy man's.
Classy word.
That's a fancy
yes.
man's kind of word, and I approve
it. It's overstuffed with a ton of celebrities and a ton of big ideas, and it's not funny. It's not funny, and it just
what the part that you're talking about.
Yeah,
no, it is funny.
And there are some laughs, but it goes on way too long.
It's very
and
funny,
and it occurs.
You're
at
not.
A, it occurs.
You're
at, not it occurs there. At a point in the film when they are about to wrap things up.
Yeah,
and it's like oh. Now, like, what, 10, 15 minutes of this now? I mean, come on. End this
like
thing.
4 minutes of that.
It felt like 30.
That's, again, you do not have comedy stamina in your buttocks where you sit.
Now,
that's your problem.
I was never a giant fan of the first Anchorman, but I didn't see it until this year. I'd never seen it, and I watched it alone on cable.
Everything about you right now is not right.
If I had seen it with an audience, it might have made a difference. Mm-hmm. But I just, it's funny, and I get why people quote it, and there's definitely quotable stuff in it. And this one, I'm sure, will have things that people will quote for years as well. But it's just, I just wanted, I never realized how much structure meant to me in comedy until watching this movie. This movie was a learning experience for me, and like, oh yeah, you need to have some kind of framework, some foundation for this thing.
No, you don't.
Yes. I mean, if you're going to make a movie like Kentucky Fried Movie or, you know, my beloved movie 43, that is literally
my beautiful movie 43.
My beautiful movie 43. That's just a series of sketches, then fine. Make a movie that's a series of sketches. Mm-hmm. But if this is supposed to be a film with, you know, that is a one thing unto itself, then you have to have a little bit of framework, or it's just this.
There is a little bit of framework.
Not enough.
There is very little framework.
Very little. But more than this framework is what you need.
Then here's the thing. Everything you say about the framework and the sketchiness of it, the sketch comedy qualities of it,
uh-huh.
is correct. It's true. However, I feel like that is a Ron Burgundy-style work ethic. And I was okay. And it's funny enough, consistently funny. Funny all the time, pretty much.
Yeah.
Every scene is funny. So who cares? Honestly, who cares?
I did.
It is funny. It made me laugh. It is about nothing.
Except,
it doesn't have to be about anything.
Except Ron has to learn things. And who wants
that
to watch Ron Burgundy learn things?
I agree with you about that. He should not have ever had a moment where he learned and stood up for righteousness or whatever, which does happen.
They learn.
But it only happens for a little bit. Like it's, and then he's back to being an idiot.
Mm.
And I forgave it that moment because everything else is funny.
I suspect that if you couldn't wait to see this movie, you will not be disappointed. And that if you were only
kind of... I could not wait to see this movie, and I was not disappointed.
If you're only kind of lukewarm on the whole Anchorman thing, maybe catch it on cable by yourself.
It's really funny.
It is. It does deliver the jokes. I'd say more than half of the jokes land, and there are a lot of jokes, but it's just jokes. It's kind of like how I never... It takes watching a bad movie sometimes to make you notice things like audio quality or continuity or, you know, sight lines, things you take for granted in a competent movie.
Yeah.
This is a movie that made me realize, oh, yeah, if you're going to have a 2-hour comedy Judd Apatow, you got to have some bones in there. But anyway, but that's me.
I think I would agree with you if this were This Is 40.
Well, that was annoying for a whole other
set of reasons. I know, but this
that one... That had dumb bones.
This one doesn't need too many bones.
All right.
It just needs to be funny.
Okay.
Doesn't matter how, just give me the funny things.
No, I'm resigned.
Go live in a lighthouse, be blind, befriend a shark, it's okay.
I'm resigned to being in the minority on this one, so, you know, whatever.
It's funny.
Onward and Upward, a movie that we and just about everybody that I've talked to really loves, is Spike Jonze's Her.
Didn't mean to yawn there. I'm not bored with you.
Uh-huh.
You're the love of my life.
You're just rude.
Yeah.
It stars Joaquin Phoenix as a guy named Theodore Twombly.
Yeah.
And he is in the process of getting divorced from his wife, played by Rooney Mara.
Yes.
And works for it's in the recognizable near future. They don't tell you how far ahead. Men's waists are a little higher in their pants.
Everyone has really hiked up pants. Yeah,
technology
That's just a really nice touch that's never explained.
Yeah. technology is a little bit advanced. Like, video games are a lot more sophisticated with their 3D stuff. And he works for a company that writes these very heartfelt letters.
Beautifullyhandwrittenletters.com.
Beautifullyhandwrittenletters.com that writes these heartfelt letters for people who don't know how to express themselves. And of course, the irony being that he's great at doing it for other people, but he's bottled up emotionally himself. He gets this amazing new operating system for his computer and with everything's connected, his phone to his laptop to whatever else. And the computer has a personality, and it is voiced by Scarlett Johansson, who I did not know that going in. It was Rashida Jones the whole time.
I knew going in.
Well, I saw it a while ago.
I forgot.
Yeah, and I try to avoid the stuff. So
Fancy Dan gets to see everything.
Fancy Dan sees everything early. Really, that's right.
Yeah.
So anyway, and he falls in love with Samantha.
Goofus, on the other hand, has to wait for the all media.
Theodore falls in love with Samantha, and it turns out, and it's not a movie about the whole farce of keeping it a secret. It becomes like there are trend pieces written about people falling in love with their OSs. Like, it's a thing that's happening, and it's about them sort of navigating their sort of virtual relationship, and about what it unlocks in him, what it unlocks in her, what the OSs sort of wind up doing as they get more and more human. They don't turn into Skynet, relax. it's a lovely, lovely movie. It's beautiful to look at. The production design is great. They've really done it's hard to do a little bit in the future.
You know?
I mean, it's hard to do a lot in the future too, but a little bit in the future. It felt recognizable. It felt plausible as the Los Angeles of 20, 30, 50 years from now. Joaquin Phoenix is amazing. This is probably the sweetest character he's ever played. Like, the least outwardly neurotic, although he's got
the least issues. Disturbing. Yeah.
He's merely
stunted,
right?
And lost.
Yeah, I think this is my favorite Spike Jonze movie, hands down.
This and Where the Wild Things Are, because I feel like they share a lot of qualities.
Sure.
There's a really palpable sadness to both of those films.
Yeah.
Mostly in Where the Wild Things Are because of James Gandolfini, who's heartbreaking in that movie.
And it's about heroes who are sort of forced to make an emotional transition.
Yeah. And this one, I got a little uppity in my review.
It's a very good review.
I apologize, world, but I'm going to explain myself a little better.
Yeah, here Dave, now. Dave's review, I think, is written from a loftier perch than you usually take in tackling films.
I don't feel like
but it's not snooty and it's not pompous and it's not show-offy. I think it's a movie that merits that kind of discussion, and I think it's one of the best things you've ever written.
I don't think. Thank you. I don't think that it's lofty. I just think it's from. So here's the thing.
You do not mention jelly donuts in this review.
I did not. Well, that is to my
detriment.
I am a weird film critic because only recently have I decided that I am one. and then, even though I've been doing this for 14 years, and I don't come to movies from film school. I didn't go to film school.
Neither did I. I know what you mean, though.
I was a literature major in college. I was all, you know.
You were a punker.
I was a super punker. Mega punker. I was hella punk. And, everything that I have in my past that I culturally informs how I view movies.
Which all film critics do, but I think that just it's what's in their past is what's different.
Mine didn't come from going to film school and learning about film. Mm. It came from punk rock.
Right.
And it came from the art world. Mm-hmm. Because that's been my other obsession basically my entire adult life.
Right. But that's where Spike Jonze comes from.
He does, in a way. Well, he comes from the Spiegel catalog, actually.
That, too. He's filtered through the whole skateboard world and, like, rock videos and, you know.
And what I mean
rock
is...
Rock videos. I sound like an old man.
The rock videos.
The rock videos.
The MTV music video games.
Yes.
Yeah. You've been an old man since I met you. But I met you in the 90s, and you're like, hey, I got the new Elvis Costello CD. I was like, so? Thanks, Grandpa, for the new Elvis Costello CD. It's 1995. Contemporary art is a big, interest of mine. Mm-hmm. And so when I look at something in a gallery or a museum, it sticks in me, and I'm looking for other stuff in the culture to make it so.
Sure.
And
you don't name your lead character Twombly.
And this movie I guarantee there's no question in my head.
Yeah.
The minute they said his last name and what he did for a living and how he's interacting with a form of communication, this movie is because Spike Jonze loves Cy Twombly. Mm-hmm. Cy Twombly, great American artist. If you don't know who he is, we'll post a link on the Linoleum Knife.
Sure, to his wiki page or something.
Facebook page. But one of Cy Twombly's most famous works is called Letter of Resignation. 38 drawings. Essentially scribbling. Scribbling and words that are blacked out, obliterated, indecipherable, just a mess. And that is, exactly what Joaquin Phoenix's characters, all those plurals that I just gave that sentence, Joaquin Phoenix's character, whose last name is also Twombly.
Wise you means Totoki.
Yeah. He suffers from the same problem. Mm-hmm. During the day, at his job, he can intuitively write beautifully heartfelt, meaningful, and true letters for people who cannot do it themselves. And the minute he's done with work, he goes home and plays a video game.
Right.
And cannot interact with anybody, is getting divorced from a woman who is a successful writer.
Right.
And because she's not what he needs, he can't reach her. So everything he does professionally is everything he can't be really.
Personally, yeah.
And so that is absolutely referencing Cy Twombly's work. And it happens consistently throughout the film. Like, and so it's in the same way that Almodovar's In My Skin. Wait, is that what it's called? Wait,
The Skin I Live In.
The Skin I Live In, sorry. The Skin I Live In is all about Louise Bourgeois. Like, everything in it is about Louise Bourgeois.
Right.
And
she's name-checked in the movie.
And she's name-checked in the movie. And so that's always a tricky thing to do. If you're a filmmaker, you risk almost all of your audience not knowing what you're talking about.
But not that you and have to know that.
You don't have to know to like her. To like this movie.
No.
But if
I certainly didn't know
you it. Will have a much deeper appreciation of it if you do a little Cy Twombly homework before you go see the film.
Now, what do you think of the people who read this and Lost in Translation as sort of the he said, she said of the end of the Spike Jonze, Sofia Coppola marriage?
I'm okay with that.
You think it's valid? It's a valid read?
Yeah, why not? I mean, a good movie has multiple readings. Sometimes a bad movie does too. I don't always think, I know this is very sort of postmodern, but and I'm sorry.
but at least you're using it correctly.
But I don't mind the idea that a text can be read differently by different people in different times, under different circumstances, for different reasons.
Yeah.
So that when I say movie X is about this, when it really wants to be about this, I'm right.
Sure.
And so is anybody else who says movie Y is about something else.
Yeah. It's once it goes out into the world, it becomes open to interpretation.
Yeah.
And you have to back yourself up, but if you can.
Getting back to this film, it's beautiful, it's moving, it's deeply sad.
Yeah.
And funny and strange and
it is lovely, and that's not a word I use a lot for movies, but
and Joaquin Phoenix is such a badass. To go from
The Master,
I'm Still Here,
right,
which was nuts, to The Master, where he was maybe the most unpleasant, disturbed, repellent character I have seen in a film in years, to this, where he so gets your empathy.
Yeah.
That the women at the Christmas party that we were at last night were talking about how beautiful his eyes were.
Yes.
And I was like, well, there's a change. You know, like, oh, he's so creepy. Aren't his eyes beautiful? Like that in a couple of years' time.
Yeah.
And so that means he's a great actor.
Yeah, he is chameleonic.
Yeah. So what else are we talking about?
Oh, but actually, I did want to point out real quick, the online website and blog for her is being managed by our friend Graham Colbeans, artist and filmmaker and designer of our logo and the pictures of us that are on our Facebook page, the picture that pops up on your iTunes when you hear this episode. That's all from Graham. And we still have some XL and 2XL t-shirts left.
Oh, yeah, t-shirts. Here's the other thing that's for sale besides the White Christmas
commentary
episode. We have 4 XL shirts left, and we have 4... No. I think we have 3 XL shirts left, and we have 4 double XL shirts left. It turns out...
Y'all are smaller people than
I thought. Y'all are tiny people. Y'all are itty-bitty tiny little people. You are smalls and mediums and larges, except for the one person who is a triple X that we bought, that we got. We ordered one t-shirt just for
special for
you. UXLs and UXXLs, all y'all fatties out there who are basically our size.
Black is very slimming.
Yeah. Start shopping. We have 7 shirts left, $20 a pop. You will not get it on the first day of Christmas, but perhaps by the 12th day of Christmas.
That's right. Yes.
Your true loves, us, will give to you, after you give us money, a linoleum leg t-shirt that will fit your... giant
big,
body.
Big, beautiful body.
Yeah.
I had a friend in college.
Enormous, hulking,
I had a friend in college.
Food-filled body.
Whose parents were super Catholic, and they did not open presents until January 6th. until Epiphany.
On Epiphany?
Yeah, on the 12th day of Christmas.
What a drag.
Can you imagine
that's
as a kid...
That's enough to make you quit the church.
...having to wait, like, almost 2 weeks?
Santa came on the 25th
I think,
for the Baptists.
I have a suspicion that the parents just wanted to hit the sales.
Yeah.
Like David Sedaris' mom says about Greek Christmas or whatever, the Greek Orthodox holiday. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. If you would like one of our remaining t-shirts, drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Once these babies are gone,
you gotta
we will...
You got to be mad enough to fill it out if you know what we mean.
Once these babies are gone, we will be ordering a new set, and we'll have lots more smalls and mediums and larges to accommodate.
We will order more.
The teeny tiny people in our teeny tiny audience.
We underestimated your...
lack of avoir-dupois.
Yeah.
You're killing me, smalls.
Your super fatness. We didn't think... Yeah, we had no idea how trim and fit all of you
were. That's right. Also opening this week is Asghar Farhadi's The Past.
Which I watched and almost cannot remember.
I still need to see A Separation. I know I'm bad on me for not having seen it. I did see The Past. And it's good.
It is good.
I think that...
I just wish I had something to say about it.
Here's my take on The Past. It's the kind of movie where he sets up a really basic, interesting situation, gives us really interesting and fully fleshed out characters that are coping with that basic, interesting situation.
Bernice Mayo is in it from The Artist.
Yeah.
She's really good.
She's terrific.
Yeah,
she's dynamite. And then you can feel him not trusting what he's already given us. And he's like, okay, I got to throw in this other, like, twisty complication. And you're thinking, no, just... These people and this situation was plenty. You don't have to keep going. So I think it doesn't know when to stop. It's the lady that does not take the one piece of jewelry off before leaving the house.
Right.
Or the man.
You put on that one piece of jewelry, and then gentlemen, you take it off. Because nobody want to look at that.
No. but that said, it is very well acted, and it's a provocative. Interesting film. It's about a woman who wants a divorce from her husband, so he has to travel from Iran to Paris so that he can divorce her, so that she can marry the
a guy who looks just like him.
She can marry husband two, who looks just like husband number one. And then there's like her kids and
little
his
Lyle
kids and their
song
kids.
Called I married her because
she looks
like
you. That's right. Funny. So it's worth checking out. This guy is, you know, definitely one of the leading lights of international cinema right now. He won the Oscar. I think he won two Oscars for A Separation, right? He didn't win screenplay. It was at least nominated for screenplay,
I
think it won Best Foreign Film.
It reminded me of when we went to Spain, and I was in Madrid with you for the very first time in 2006.
Uh-huh.
And I thought I was just kind of into you, but then I got in Spain and I realized that all the dudes in Spain are real hot.
Thanks.
Yeah, so...
So I'm not so special.
No, and I could have had any of them, really,
yeah,
because I'm that magnetic.
Because you're the white colonist.
And, But I was walking down the street with you being like, that guy's hot, and that guy's hot, and that guy's hot. All these Spaniards are hot.
I do that when I walk with you all the time.
You're looking.
Zing. What does that have to do with The Past?
Well, she married
the
guy.
Oh, the guy that
was
yeah, okay.
Basically, I could have discarded you.
And found yourself another Spanish
friend. I could have gone looking for a new love, like. Jody Wally.
Mm. Lucky me. That you didn't.
Phew. What's the phrase that we are going to say here? Not thank God for me. No.
And then the last one I wanted to mention real quick, it's a film called White Reindeer.
Which I did not watch.
That IFC is distributing. It's currently doing a one-week run in L.A., and I believe it's on demand as well. It stars an actress named Anna-Margaret Holloman, who I have gotten kind of to know over the years at festivals. She's been in a lot of shorts. She was in Gaby. Definitely up-and-coming actress. She is the main reason to see this movie, I think. It's about a woman who lives in Virginia. She's a real estate agent. Her husband is a local weatherman. He's just gotten a new job in Hawaii, and everything's great. And so, of course, if everything's great in the first 5 minutes of a Christmas movie, you know that it's all about to go south because, you know, things have to go right at the end of a Christmas movie. He is murdered by a home intruder. And as things go along, she comes to find out this hidden life that he had, including this affair with a stripper that he had that went on for several months before he broke it off. She winds up befriending the stripper and kind of getting into this sort of crazy, druggy, shoplifty lifestyle with the exotic dancers for a while. She goes to a suburban swinger party. She overspends on the internet. And
I saw the swinger party scene.
Yeah.
I was walking through the living room when that was happening.
Yeah, so it's another, if you want to see naked Joe Swanberg, or most of naked Joe Swanberg.
And
you
know, weird,
straight people wearing masks.
Weird conceptions of what an orgy is. Look, everybody put on a mask.
It doesn't look like the lifestyle, but who's to say that there aren't orgies out there that look like that?
There's this great documentary from the year 2000, is it?
Something like that.
Called The Lifestyle, which is almost impossible to find now.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Like, I mean, it came out on DVD, but good luck finding it.
Huh.
But if you can find it.
Oh, fascinating.
Oh, man.
So good.
It's about Orange County, late middle age, early retiree age.
Swingers. Like people who missed the sexual revolution the first time
straight around. People, swingers in the suburbs. And
not just Orange County, like in Littleton, Colorado.
The documentary and, you know, filmmakers go to the parties.
Yeah.
And you see everything. It is the most sexually explicit film that I have ever seen in an actual movie theater.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the people are really banging.
And almost everyone in the cast is over 50.
Yeah, yeah. It's, boy, is it great.
Yeah,
it is the best.
It's a fascinating
movie. It's one of my favorite documentaries because I could not believe my eyes.
Yeah, and they're so strangely reactionary while at the same time.
Yeah, they're super conservative, like Republicans.
Yeah, but they're being libertines at the same time.
But they just want to get it on.
And you see these like
all the time.
And oh God, the shag carpeted orgy pits and the lady who serves taquitos and pizza rolls.
Yeah. All kinds of good food.
It's an amazing movie. Anyway, White Reindeer.
It's not about orgies.
It's not about orgies. There's just one in
There's
it.
Just one. It's a very Eyes Wide Shutty kind of orgy.
I could see what the director was shooting for, and I think that Holloman's performance holds the film together, and she's really good. I kind of felt like, you know, there's a lot of sort of, not cheap shots, but kind of easy outs of like, oh, suburban swingers, and oh, you know, like strippers doing cocaine. Like,
isn't that funny?
Yeah, or isn't that shocking? Or isn't that? You know, it felt not as clever as it could have been. And they don't. And the Christmas angle of it, I don't know how entirely successful that is in terms of a counterpoint for this her emotional dissolution and whatever. But it's. If you're interested in sort of dark themed Christmas movies, and I think to see her performance, I would say it's worth checking out.
All Is Bright is a better dark themed Christmas
movie. All Is Bright is a better dark themed Christmas movie that came
Paul
out this
Giamatti
year.
Yeah,
it is, and Paul Rudd.
And Paul Rudd.
It is now on and Sally Hawkins. It's now on DVD.
Yeah.
But White Reindeer is playing a limited theatrical release, and I think it's also on demand, so you can watch it wherever you are.
All right, letters. Oh, do you want to do the DVD picks of the week?
Sure.
First?
Yeah. I what's yours?
Well, I wish it could be The Lifestyle, but it's too hard to find.
Okay.
But really, try to find it. Seriously, go try to find this movie. There's an old guy in this movie with maybe the largest penis I've ever seen in my entire life. it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
And you see it, all of it.
In action.
In action, yeah.
What's your DVD pick?
It's called A Christmas Family Tragedy, which I have not watched yet, but it's coming like tomorrow from Netflix. So it's on Netflix. You could totally get it. It is about, it's a documentary about a 1929 Christmas Day massacre that took place in rural some state, Tennessee or South Carolina, one of those kinds of places. The guy murdered his wife and six of his seven children.
Oh my God.
And committed suicide on Christmas Day. And it's all about like the aftermath of that and the sort of decades long like ripple effect of, you know, ideas about mass killings and family dysfunction.
Did you find this stuff?
I found it on Netflix. It was in my queue. It said, you may like.
Well, then they're right.
So I haven't seen it yet, but I'm super excited to watch it. Like, it'll come tomorrow just in time for Christmas
Yay.
Eve.
Yay!
And, Yeah, I mean, you know, Netflix sometimes, you know, you go on Netflix and it says you may also enjoy this documentary about a mass killing on Christmas.
Well, they got your number.
And so I don't enjoy mass killings on Christmas. I don't enjoy mass killings in real life. But I think they are
compelling subject matter.
Fascinating, yeah. And so so I'm kind of stoked to watch this. It won't bum me out because it happened in 1929.
It was, they'd be dead by now anyway.
Almost 100 years ago. Yeah, if they all if they'd lived, they'd all be dead. And so
Lord. All right. I was going to pick, speaking of movies you can't find, because of her, I was going to pick Electric Dreams as my DVD pick, but it's still not available in this country.
Clever of you.
You can get Region 2 DVDs, you can get old VHS tapes from Amazon used, but you cannot get on DVD, you cannot get it streaming. So instead...
Has somebody put it on YouTube?
I'll look.
It's probably
on YouTube. I'll look. But instead, my DVD pick is Top Secret. Because like Anchorman 2, it is this insane barrage of jokes. But again, I think it's got enough of a plot to hold it together. And
it's a great thing to watch like the day after Christmas.
When you're on the sofa and can't move.
Because you're just on the sofa and you're just like, I'm not doing anything.
You're in an eggnog coma.
Going nowhere. I'm doing nothing. Although I will be going somewhere the day after Christmas.
Really?
Yeah. I will be going to the Grove, probably.
To buy me things at the sale?
To see. No.
Oh,
no.
Oh,
you can't even. Let me tell you, you're going to be so happy with your impeccably. I won't use the word curated because it's overused and needs to be retired. Your impeccably selected Christmas stocking packed with gifts. Mm-hmm. It's going to blow your mind.
Is it a you may like kind of?
This is a you may like kind of thing. Yeah, like you're not going to need anything from any sale. Because everything you ever desired is in that stocking. I guarantee you watch.
I'll report next week to see if this is true or not. I'm very happy with
what you're going to be so happy. You're going to make a list and you're going to enumerate the contents of your stocking for the audience, for the listeners. That's what you're going to do.
I'm very happy with what I'm getting you to.
The day after Christmas, I'm going to the Grove with my new movie boyfriend, Matt. Mm-hmm.
The one who went to see Bastards with you to eat waffles.
The one who went, Matt, who went with me to Encino Town Center to see Claire Denis' Bastards, one of the best movies of the year. We're going to go see Believe, which is the new Justin Bieber documentary, because I have to review it, and they did not show it to the press. And here's what's great. They needed another Justin Bieber film.
To make up for the first one?
No, to act as a
PR.
Like,
because since the first one, people don't like him so much.
Well, you know, he's
acted out.
He learned where his penis was.
Mm-hmm. They dropped,
and he became a bad boy. The first one was when he was a good boy.
Yes,
but now he's learned what the sex is about, and he goes around peeing on things.
Right.
And so they had to make another movie.
He peed on the Anne Frank
each house. Chapter of Bieber's existence is going to be documented on film. It's going to be like the Up series. Like 7 Up, 14 Up, 21 Up.
And at some point, he'll make a movie called Hasbeeb.
Yeah. Like, in another 3 or 4 years, there'll be another Justin Bieber documentary called, you know, Mid-20s Crisis. And I'm excited about that. So I told Matt that I wanted to keep our movie-going relationship pure by only going to see, like...
Movies about bastards?
Really hardcore art films, like the toughest sits of all.
The rigorous films.
But he said, no, I want to go see the Justin Bieber movie with you. So we're going to do that. You're not going.
I offered.
No, you're not going. Here's why you're not going. Because that's a $15 ticket. We're not wasting $30 on the Justin Bieber movie.
Since I don't have to write about it.
We're going to waste $15. And I'll tell you the good parts.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. If you're that...
Of which there will be many,
I'm sure. If you're that excited to see it, it'll be on cable or Netflix pretty quickly.
I'm sure it will be. I'm not worried about
The... And speaking of Matt, he He is our first letter.
Oh, yeah.
He sent us a Christmas card with a really long letter.
Yes.
On paper, a paper letter. I'm going to read the whole thing. Hi, guys. I'm sending you my favorite Christmas films list in the mail rather than just sending an email. It seems more Christmassier somehow. For some reason, I cannot find Alonso's book. So I only had my memory and IMDb to help with this. I'm sure I'm forgetting something great. Is there a great Christmas moment in a Fassbender, Truffaut, Godard, or Fellini that I'm forgetting? Well, Eric Rohmer.
My Night at Mom's. And A Winter's Tale.
I'm afraid my list is too obvious and middle of the road, so I'm looking forward to hearing what you think, Bosses of Christmas. IMDb tells me that George Cukor's Holiday, one of my all-time faves, but all I remember is the New Year's scene.
Yeah, it's not really a Christmas
movie. And Merchant Ivory's Morris both have Christmas scenes, though I can't remember them. Also, I hate that Ishti Studio 54 film, 54.
Hey, now.
But I love, you didn't make it.
I know, but our friend Mark did.
Yes, I know.
And the director's cut is way better than the studio release.
Look, all opinions expressed in letters are not the opinions of Linoleum Knife.
I know, but I just feel compelled in case Mark is listening.
Mark, if you're listening, we like you, and we like 54.
Yes. Well, we like your cut of 54.
I haven't seen your cut of 54.
I do.
But I'm one of the people who liked 54.
Oh, even the Harvey
Weinstein.
Because
I found it quite entertaining.
It is. If nothing else, it is, yes.
Yeah. I especially like the part in the theatrical cut where Ryan Phillippe loses his dish about decadence. It's all so wrong and meaningless. So that was really funny.
Going back to the letter.
I hate that Studio 54 film 54, but I love Ryan Phillippe in his Christmas costume, those fur-lined boots. I like that a lot.
Pretty hot.
Keep up the amazing job you do on Linoleum Knife.
Thank you.
We will. It's the best film podcast out there, and I think one of the things that I enjoy most, in addition to your individual thoughts and discussion of capital T, the capital C cinema, is your rapport together. I love the little details of your life and relationship, laughing at one another, digging at each other over choice of opening song, etc. Essentially, he's saying that we're adorable.
Yes. Expect more digging in 2014.
Okay, that's it. Hope your holidays are going well. Swell. And we are looking forward to seeing you next weekend. This was sent before the Christmas party. They came to the Christmas party. XOXO, Matt, one hug and one kiss for you and for me.
Yay, Matt.
Yeah. Here are Matt's favorite Christmas films.
Okay.
In chronological order.
All
the
right.
Thin Man.
Yeah.
Remember the Night.
Totally.
The Shop Around the Corner.
Yes.
He says, one of Lubitsch's best, and Margaret Sullivan is just so extraordinary. There's such a wonderful sadness in this beautiful Christmas love story.
It's great.
Meet Me in St. Louis.
Sure.
Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas is my all-time favorite Christmas song. It's so heartfelt as it's sung in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Not just beautifully melancholic for that moment in the film, but as a poignant elegy for those at war during World War II. It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, totally.
Which we're going to go see this afternoon.
Yes, in 35mm.
35mm print at Cinefamily. Mm-hmm. I'm stoked for this. He says, it never really gets old. I'm not crazy about angels. I hate the cloying baby Zuzu at the end. Look, man, you take the whole thing.
Yeah, it's a package deal.
But I know what he's talking about. But everything else, especially Donna Reed and James Stewart's agonizing performance is extraordinary. Mm. Look, the thing, I'll tell you, just a little aside, his performance in this movie is devastating.
Yeah.
Like, you look, compare it to somebody in a film today, and it is agonizing. He's
haunted.
Dark and haunted, yeah. And their romance in the beginning portion of the film, before they get married, is hot.
Yeah. Between her being naked in a bush, and then them, like, making out on the phone.
That kiss scene is like, you're like, do it, do it, do it.
He's devouring
do
her.
Do it, yeah. My favorite moment, when young Mary says into George's bad ear, George Bailey, I'll love you till the day I die. Black Narcissus.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing says Christmas like it's like nuns in the Himalayas. And even though it's a small scene, I love the nuns' lonely Christmas night of singing hymns, which is interrupted by drunken David Farrar, and how Deborah Carr's sexual attraction to Farrar unlocks one of Carr's Christmas memories of being given a special gift by her boyfriend. Number 7, The Reckless Moment.
I know of that film.
Max Ophuls.
Yeah.
He says it's Edward G. best. Robinson? He says it is the best Christmas noir.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, have you seen Christmas Holiday, Mr.
Stepperson? I'm sure he has.
Probably so. Yeah. All right, I will check out Reckless Moment.
8, All That Heaven Allows.
Oh, yeah.
I love its artificial New England aesthetic, and a television set has never looked scarier.
Except maybe in the Twonky.
Number 9 is a tie for Santa Claus,
mm-hmm.
which is the greatest film of all time. Of course. And Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
Sure.
Number 10, The Lion in Winter. Number 11, Black Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
The final scene, The Eye Behind the Door.
Mm-hmm.
She says it totally freaks me out every time. Honestly, that movie still disturbs and frightens me.
Oh, well, in the 12 Days of Killmas?
I've watched it so many times, and every time I get so creeped out and unnerved by that movie.
Well, you know, our
The Exorcist doesn't even do that to me.
Our friend Bibbs, William Bibbiani, and his friend Ryan, I'm forgetting his last name, from Shock to You Drop, have been doing this 12 Days of Killmas series on Crave Online, which I was lucky enough to be part of. And the first movie they do is Black Christmas, and Ryan, who is a hardcore horror guy, says it's one of the few movies that actually scares him
still scary.
And it's
it's one of my all-time favorite horror movies.
It's very potent.
It's really, really unsettling.
Mm.
Number 12, Female Trouble.
Yep.
Number 13, Matt, dude, I love you. Ordinary People.
Christmas in London.
I love this film. I relate to it and have always loved its waspy portrait of the holiday and Mary Tyler Moore zoning out on the escalator during her Christmas shopping and having that awkward encounter with her friend on the other escalator.
All right.
Hi, I'm shopping. Yeah.
I haven't seen that in a while.
Fanny and Alexander.
Yes.
Number 15, A Christmas Story.
Mm-hmm.
Number 16, Monty Python's The Meaning of Life.
Right. It's Christmas. It's Christmas in heaven.
Gremlins.
Yeah.
Howard's End.
Mm-hmm.
A Christmas Tale. Arnaud Desplechin.
Oh, yeah.
And In Bruges. Was that a Christmas film?
Is that a Christmas movie?
Set at Christmas? I don't remember that.
I'd look at it again.
Bonus film. The Insects' Christmas. 1913 Russian film.
Oh.
Vladislav Stadovich. Stop motion animation of bugs and toys.
I have not seen that one.
I'm going to watch that right now.
We'll go look.
As soon as we're done, I bet that's on YouTube.
No problem.
Yeah. Thank you, Matt. All right, here comes another one.
Okay.
Another handwritten letter. Well, hand-typed. That was typed. This one's typed. The third one is handwritten.
Yes, in multicolors.
Super into. Gentlemen, this is from Dan. Dan in San Francisco. First, love the podcast. It's become one of my favorites, and I will usually skip past other things and listen to it first.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Keep up the good work. Since I'm ordering a book, I thought I should share a little story. Back when I was just a young gay guy, a friend started introducing me to older classic movies. One year for Christmas Eve, we made plans to get together for dinner and a movie. Now, normally, I would ask him to pick the movie, but since he was working for UPS, he didn't really have time to take care of this, so he sent me to the video store. Just pick something you haven't seen, he said. So I went, looked around, spotted a title I knew but knew nothing about, and headed home to cook. When my friend showed up and asked what movie I picked out, I showed him the box, and he looked at me and said, "Are you crazy?" That movie was Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? We watched it after dinner.
Christmas.
And then we laughed and went out for drinks. Ever since then, we jokingly refer to it as my favorite Christmas movie. Here's a movie list for you to knife. It's not holiday themed, and I haven't really given it much thought. It's just the ones off the top of my head that I really like, in no particular order. Knife away. By the way, Matt, you're 100%.
Oh, absolutely.
Here's Steve's. I mean, I'm sorry. Here's Dan's.
Dan's.
Number 1, Maltese Falcon.
Oh, this is not Christmas. It's just movies.
Just his favorite movie.
Okay, yes.
The Big Sleep.
Okay.
Casablanca.
I sense a theme here.
You're going to lose the theme.
Oh.
My Winnipeg.
Oh,
yeah, which is a terrific Guy Madden film. Ryan, a 2004 movie called Ryan that I have never heard of.
Got me.
1996's Lilies from John Grayson.
Oh, yeah.
When the Day Breaks, 1999, which I have not seen.
Is that the Runaway movie with, like, Ricky Lake and Dermot Mulroney?
I do not know.
Hang on, looking it up. Go ahead.
Number 8, The Incredibles.
Yes.
Number 9, Bruce Weber's Let's Get Lost.
Yes.
Which I really like. And 93 is The Wrong Trousers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he buys a book, which is great.
Well,
because we have money. So, you, dude, because we do not know two of these titles.
Yeah, we'll give you Rye. What is,
when you're 100% knife because we don't know two of them.
Did you say 1999 is when the day breaks?
Yeah, Amanda Forbes, Wendy Tilby are the directors.
Yeah, it's a short film.
Oh, it's a short film.
A rooster has his last biscuit for breakfast and goes grocery shopping. A pig prepares her breakfast, potato peelings with the potatoes thrown in the trash, and discovers she needs more milk. Their paths cross, a lemon falls into the sewer, and both lives are changed.
I can't wait to watch
that's
that.
That's the plot synopsis.
I can't wait to watch that.
Oscar nominee for Best Animated Short.
I'm going to watch that movie. That sounds great.
Yeah.
I like a pig and a lemon.
Who doesn't?
This, wait a second, who is this from? Jenny. Thank you, Jenny. This letter is in the form of a Christmas card made to look as though a child wrote it.
Are those crayons?
Drawings as colored pencils. There are drawings of us as snowmen on the front of the card. But not even really snowmen, like disembodied facial features against a white backdrop. And it's just Alonzo and Dave snowmen. Maybe I got to take a picture of this.
Put it on the
and put page. It on the page, yeah. Dear David Alonso, I cannot describe how fun it has been to enjoy your podcast for the past 3 years. Fun I to see what enjoy, you did there. Yeah. So you never have to worry that "thank God for me" is going to become the catchphrase, because apparently the listeners have decided
fun
that
to enjoy.
It's fun to enjoy. Is their
sweeping
favorite,
the nation.
Is their favorite thing to say? I am outraged that the status quo does not know about you too, and I vow to make it my mission in 2014 to spread your gospel.
Yay.
May your podcast last another 30 years, which means that I will be 80.
Stranger things have happened.
And I fine, I'll do it. Enclosed is the $1.99 for the white Christmas commentary. She sent cash, which is,
that's fine.
I really adore that. Thank you. It went into the apocalypse cash box.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a box of apocalypse cash.
He does. Although usually it winds up being the, oh God, we're going to park somewhere and we need cash.
Yeah, we need money for the valet and we don't want to go to the bank. So let's take, you know, 10 bucks out of apocalypse cash.
Because if the apocalypse happens, it's going to be bullion or nothing, I think.
Gold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not bouillon.
I'm going to start.
Bullion.
I'm going to start, like, not chicken stock.
No.
Bullion. Yeah.
Bullion.
Yeah, I think we should start buying gold and hoarding it. Like,
that's
like
a great idea.
Like Glenn Beck.
Totally.
I'm into that idea.
And those seed packets, too, while we're at it. Anyway, go on. Jenny's letter.
And she said she was including a compilation tape that she made in 1995, but then she didn't do it because the post office makes you... It's a package, then, if you say.
Oh, right.
She's going to send it separately.
Okay.
Her all-time top 10 films in no real order. Number 1, Back to the Future.
Okay.
2, Harold and Maude.
Yay.
3, Fargo, which I really love and you do not.
I like Frances McDormand's performance enough to sort of overcome
The Shining.
This, sure.
Pan's Labyrinth.
Yay.
Jaws.
Yeah.
Nightmare Before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Edward Scissorhands.
Okay.
Goodfellas.
Yeah.
1982's The Thing.
Okay.
Dude, you are also 100% knife.
Absolutely.
All three people are 100% knife.
Merry Christmas.
We
have some other letters that are about top 10 lists, but we're going to be doing our top 10 list show in a couple of weeks, hopefully with some special guests.
Wait, there's one more.
So we'll save those. Okay, what do you got?
This is from Douglas.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. in response to last week's discussion of Love Actually.
My questions, my series of questions about Love Actually, one of which was, why must Dido?
Mm-hmm.
He says, all I could think of was the scene from National Lampoon's Animal House. Why Pinto? Why not? Then I realized Dave was probably burned out on this song from watching Roswell over and over again. I should point out that I really like her. Well, of course you do, or you wouldn't be emailing us about it. Nobody writes an email defending Dido unless they really like her.
Yeah, that's kind of a given.
Her last, he qualifies it though by saying her last disc, produced by Brian Eno, pretty much sucked.
Ah.
I would posit that all of them have sucked.
Yes, well, you would.
Especially when she is working with Faithless. He really likes her when she's with Faithless.
I see.
See, her brother Rollo, I know. I know. I'll read it anyway. See, her brother Rollo, whatever, you want to sing the jingle and have some chocolate and caramel. I know I do. Was one of the founders and producers of Faithless, and that is how she got her break. So that's why, Dido. Must. For me, Douglas. P.S. Your joyous holiday podcasts have buoyed the gray days here in Cleveland for me.
Well, great.
Sure, Dido. Whatever, dude. No, you know what? You get nowhere arguing music with people.
No, it's very, very subjective. And
it is very subjective. I'm always right, obviously, but you people get to have all of the opinions and pleasures that you like. If you like Dido, I'm sorry.
Big of you.
If you meet me in 1995 and get excited about the latest Elvis Costello CD, I'm also sorry, and I will marry you, in spite of it.
Well, aren't you magnanimous?
I am.
You're a regular Mother Teresa.
It's true. We're done. Listen to all the podcasts.
No. We rushed through that last week.
Enjoy the Christmas.
I need to, because people will have some downtime over Christmas, maybe some more time to listen to the podcast. Check out
My brother and me.
I'm getting there. Yeah. Visit ChristyLemire.com. If you listen to Sirius Radio, listen to the Rotten Tomatoes show, listen to for the Frank DeCaro show, which had me on this week. Thank you for that. And listen to Derek and Romaine, on which we appear about a monthly basis. And over in podcast land, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, The Schmoes Know, The B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Podcrash, Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and The Lunch. You can subscribe to this show on iTunes, and if you would leave us a positive review there, that would be super great because it helps our placement on their homepage. You can stream the show at Stitcher Radio or at thelounge.com. You can also stream the show on our Facebook page, which you should totally go like, Linoleum Knife Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can check into the show at GetGlue.com, even though they don't give out stickers anymore. And, of course, you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with comments, questions, top 10 lists, your top 10 of 2013 or your worst 10 of 2013. Both of my lists have been posted on the Wrap, and we'll be talking about those more in a couple of weeks. You can also contact us there if you want to purchase the White Christmas commentary or a Linoleum Knife t-shirt.
There are also two copies left of your book.
Yes,
there are two copies left of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, which you will not get by Christmas, but it'll give you all of 2014 to read and research and pick your favorites.
Yes, Highlight and Dog Ear, the movies that you want to watch next December.
So, that's correct.
As always, we thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.